Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is February 22nd, 2013. I'm here at Steel Beam in the Hammer. Yes, the Hammer. That's another name for Hamilton, Ontario. Thank you to all the SGEM listeners for the positive feedback they gave about the Beam Dream Team podcast on appendicitis. It was really well received, and we'd like to replicate that. But I've got one of the Beam experts here, one of the EBM experts here in pediatrics. It's Dr. Anthony Crocco. Can you say hello, Anthony?
Hey, guys. How are you doing today?
Now, as I said, he is a pediatric ED doc. And since we are here together again in Hamilton, I'm going to take advantage of having this pediatric expert with us. The SGEM has covered a couple of pediatric topics in the past. These were podcasts on the Ottawa ankle rules and the Ottawa knee rules. Oops, I'm sorry. I meant clinical decision instruments. Rules are made to be broken. Now, Anthony here has a difficult task, more difficult than most of us. We usually are just treating one patient. Anthony here must treat both the patient and their caregiver. Now, looking at the possibilities of topics that we could cover, and of course the time of year being February, we decided to tackle the coughing child. So the title of today's podcast is called Honey, Honey. Now, the goal of the SGEM remains the same. The goal of the SGEM, of course, is to give you, the SGEM listener, the high-quality, clinically relevant, critically appraised information using social media for the low, low price of $0. We are turning Med-Ed on its head, trying to cut that knowledge translation window from 10 years to 1 year. As always, the medium is the message. So I'm going to turn to Anthony, our pediatric expert, and ask us to give a case of a coughing child.
Thank you, Ken. So our case this week is a 5-year-old boy who presents to the emergency department with his parents. This 5-year-old boy has had a 2-day history of rhinorrhea and congestion, has been coughing through the day and especially through the night, and mild fever at home, but otherwise feeding well, in no apparent distress. On your exam, he looks well, vital signs are normal, normal oxygenation, and chest exam reveals no focal crackles, no focal wheeze, just a child who looks a little bit congested and under the weather with what we would typically call an upper respiratory tract infection, or using the vernacular, a cold.
Ah, a cold, doctor. Now, Anthony, you know, the parents are going to ask you, are you one of the 4 out of 5 doctors that recommend the Benylin formula for treating a cough? Or can you use that it tastes awful, but it works product for the cough?
I got to say, Ken, I get a lot of parents asking me these questions as to which cough and cold preparation I recommend. And it usually starts me off on one of my tirades. And if you've met me, you know that I do have several tirades that I will start off on. The over-the-counter medication tirade is one of my personal favorites.
Well, before we let you loose on the SGEM listeners with your tirade, how about we back up a step and say, yeah, I know this kid has got a URI, has got a, what did you call that again? Oh, yes, a cold. And I am making air quotes here. A cold. But what's your differential diagnosis? Even before you examine the child and stuff like that, what's your differential diagnosis for a child who comes in with a cough, just so we can broaden this out a bit?
So it's a good question, Ken, and I always like people to think before you, you know, pigeonhole someone into a diagnosis, try and keep your thoughts broad so that you're not missing other possible diagnostic etiologies. The way that I think about cough is that it's either infectious origin or non-infectious origin. And the infectious origin can either be upper airway, such as pharyngitis. You know, we even see kids with otitis media presenting with cough, croup, down to lower airway, where we start to see things like bronchiolitis and pneumonia. On the non-infectious side, we certainly see kids presenting with asthma that have cough. We see kids presenting with foreign body aspiration that have cough. There's a number of other, you know,
GERD
reflux, GERD. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, gastroesophageal reflux disease for those people who don't know GERD.
Absolutely. So those are all things that are on my differential before I go in and then start getting a bit more information and do my physical exam. Certainly the vast majority of times it ends up being a viral infection, but we do pick up the odd child that does have something else going on, such as asthma or a foreign body.
When I see adults, I see both children and adults, but when I see adults coming in with a cough, I have pretty much two stock questions that I ask them. One is, do they smoke? And I assume that you don't have to ask that too much in the pediatric population, I hope.
More than you'd think, but for the vast majority of kids that present with these URTI symptoms, they're under the age of 6 or 7. And
they got pink lungs?
Yeah, they've got nice pink lungs that haven't been marred with years of smoking. So for the most part, that's not an issue.
The second thing I ask is, of course, did they get the flu shot this year? And I think that's important when we see these people coming in. It's prevention. And if we can prevent disease and illness, we're one step ahead of the game. And flu shots are, of course, recommended for children, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so you've got a couple of papers, I think, two or three papers picked out rather than just one paper. So let's jump into the first paper. And that one is the over-the-counter medications for acute cough in children and adults. So we're bridging your specialty here, for children and adults in an ambulatory setting. So could you give us some information on that, Ben?
Yeah, certainly. And so I reviewed this article as part of the 2013 Beam lineup. And I really try and absolve myself of all responsibilities from knowledge about adult medical issues.
But I was surprised that, there was adults, somebody over the age 18.
From my perspective, once you hit 18 from a medical standpoint, you cease to exist in my books and you're not my problem. But this is a paper that does pertain to both adults and children. So forgive me for delving into the adult side of things. So we're going to go through the PICO, the population intervention comparison and outcome. The population for this study was children and adults with acute cough in the outpatient setting, presenting to an acute care center. The intervention was non-prescription over-the-counter oral cough medications, and they divided these into specific groups, including antitussives, expectorants, mucolytics, antihistamine decongestant combinations, and then all the other drug combinations that can exist from that. Including just plain antihistamines.
So no mustard plasters, though?
No, that and leeches were not included in the
okay.
study. Yeah. So comparison, there is no specified comparison in the methodology. They looked at sort of all comparisons. And then the outcome that they looked at, the primary outcome was cough-related outcomes, including cough frequency, cough severity, sputum production, and improvement. Secondary outcomes that they looked at included adverse events.
All right, so we know who we're talking about, both kids and adults, and it looks like they covered a wide myriad of both treatment agents and a wide myriad of outcomes. What were the main results from this over-the-counter cough medicine study, review in Cochrane?
Well, so this Cochrane study, it was really interesting because this Cochrane study, they actually were able to find 26 studies that met their criteria, and this was actually an update of a previous review that had been done. What was interesting for me is that out of the 26 studies that were done, 11 of the 26 studies were funded by the pharmaceutical industry, and then the other 15 were not funded by pharmaceutical industry. And what was interesting is 8 of the 11 studies that were funded by the pharmaceutical industry were positive, whereas only 3 of the 15 studies that were unfunded by pharmaceutical industry were positive. So kind of interesting to see that.
Before you tell me stuff like that, I need to sit down, okay? If you're going to knock me over with, ooh, pharmacy-funded stuff showed positive results, and then non-funded showed
no effect.
No effect.
Yeah.
I'm sitting down now.
Yeah,
thank
I know
you.
This is a great surprise to everybody that more studies, that if studies are funded by a pharmaceutical industry, you're more likely to find effect. I know this is a great revelation for everybody. So
now we're joking around a bit about this, but I mean, that's why in these evidence-based medicine and critical reviews, we do these funnel plots looking for publication bias and looking for funding sources and to see if there was some kind of bias one way or the other. So I know we are joking around a bit, Anthony, about it, but it is important to look at who supported the study? What was the secondary gain? How blinded were these institutions with regards to the outcome? And we do see that in the funnel plots where there is a preponderance of positive studies for a number of reasons, but a number of positive studies, a preponderance of those are published.
Yeah, absolutely, Ken. I worry a lot about bias when I'm reading studies. And when I hear that studies are being funded by the pharmaceutical industry, I worry that's going to bias towards treatment effect.
So what was the bottom line? What was the main result, bottom line, from this meta-analysis?
Yeah, so unfortunately, they weren't able to do a proper meta-analysis on these papers because the heterogeneity between the studies was too high. They weren't able to sort of put them through what I call the magic math meat grinder.
Heterogeneity meaning the studies were too unlike each other. They weren't similar enough to combine mathematically?
Absolutely. So, you know, if they're looking at different doses, different timing of doses, different outcome measures, it's hard then to include those together. I kind of agree with the author's conclusions on this. The author's two conclusions that I think are worthy of note. Number one is that, and this is a direct quote from the paper, the overall quality of trials is dubious and there are conflicting results between trials in each medication group. And the second quote is, there is no good evidence for or against the effectiveness of over-the-counter cough medication or medicines. And I agree that this study sort of says, you know, there are papers that say that there is effect, and most of those are funded by the pharmaceutical industry. And then there's a number of papers that say that there's no effect, and those predominantly are not funded. So it makes me really wonder, you know, I don't think that we can show that there's any significant effect to these medications.
I just like the word dubious.
Yeah, it's actually a great word.
It's in an article.
Yeah,
dubious.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy is combining the art of medicine, the art and medicine. It was dubious. Now, what I tell adult patients when they come in about which cough medicine to use, because we are getting into the adult literature here, what I tell them is that, you know, if there was one great cough syrup that worked, there wouldn't be this long aisle full of hundreds of different kinds of cough syrup. This one cough syrup would have cornered the market. But because there isn't any really good, powerful, effective cough syrup, they have to have this huge, long, you know, shelf in every drugstore because there's no real good treatment, or at least effective treatment. Is that correct?
Yeah. No, I feel the same way. You know, the flip side of this for me, given that we don't have good, you know, good proof of effect for these medications, for me, the other side of this is, are there any risks of these medications?
Well, let's talk about harm then, because we're always trying to, balance benefit versus harm. And we've just talked about a large Cochrane review showing that there isn't really any good evidence for benefit. So we've got to always consider harm. So,
absolutely.
So harm, kids, poisoning?
Yeah, well, I looked at the 2011 data from the National Poison Data Systems. Now, this is American data. So for Canadians, we generally divide by 10. But the American data for 2011 was that in terms of over-the-counter medications like cough and cold medications like this, there were about 35,000 pediatric cases of overdoses.
35,000?
Yes.
Holy smokes.
Now, that represented about 3% of the pediatric calls to poison control centers. And in addition, there were 5 pediatric deaths related to these medications, which represented about 10% of all pediatric toxicologic deaths.
10% of all deaths due to cough medicines?
Yeah.
Because of a child was
medications.
Over-the-counter medicine cough. Wow.
Yeah. So likely what had happened, and I'm not sure, I don't have the details, but I mean, it's not uncommon for kids to get into medications, especially if they taste good. And instead of, you know, if they find the bottle, just taking a simple one dose, they'll just down the whole bottle. And these cough and cold medications, they have real, you know, pharmacologically active medications in them.
They're not inert.
They're not inert. They don't seem to help with cough and cold symptoms, but they're not inert and they can kill you. And so, you know, for a young kid that gets into a tasty bottle, a big bottle of some over-the-counter medication, that's potentially lethal.
Childproof your home.
Yeah.
Well, and part of that would be, don't have cough medicines for kids in the house.
I sort of liken these to poison. I mean, if you want to put a bottle of poison in front of your kid and hope that they don't taste it and drink it, you know, we've got no effect. We've got no evidence of effect for these medications. We've got evidence of harm. I really honestly can't see why this market still exists in the pharmacy. Why there continues to be an aisle with all these medications.
Well, why don't we jump into a Cochrane review then of specifically looking at children then, because that's your area of expertise, Anthony.
Yeah.
Let's look at just children. And there is a Cochrane review. Would you like to discuss that for
us? Yeah. So, you know, I mean, it's hard because cough is a real symptom and cough keeps kids up at night and keeps parents up at night. And
parents have to go to work in the morning. Kids have to go to school.
Absolutely. And if these folks aren't sleeping, then it disrupts the whole family unit. And so one of the things that's been used historically is honey for cough.
I like it.
All right. So no big pharma is making drug money or money off these medications. It's just honey. And there was a Cochrane systematic review that just came out and looking at this very question as to whether honey had any effect on cough in children. And so the article is called Honey for Acute Cough in Children. It was a systematic review. And I'll go through the PICO that they used. It was children between the ages of 2 and 18 years of age with acute cough from a URTI, so exactly the kid that we're talking about today.
So an upper respiratory tract infection, children.
Absolutely. That's our, and I mean, really this time of year, that's like 50% of what I see.
Yeah.
So that's a big money maker for me, and it's nice to be able to think that we might have some hope of giving people symptom relief. The intervention that they looked at was honey plus or minus antibiotics. The comparison that they used was anything from placebo to no treatment to cough syrup plus or minus antibiotics for those groups. The primary outcome that they looked at was duration of cough or symptomatic relief of cough. And then there's a number of secondary outcome measures, including quality of sleep for the child or caregiver, quality of life, adverse effects, appetite, cost as well. So looking at a number of different things. All in all, this was a well-performed, exhaustive, systematic review. Unfortunately, there's only two studies that met inclusion criteria, and the two studies had significant issues with regards to blinding. You know, as you can imagine, if I'm giving you honey versus nothing, it's hard to blind you as to which treatment arm you're in.
Most people would know if they're getting a spoonful of honey.
Absolutely. And so even though, you know, these studies had issues with blinding, when we look at the forest plot from the two studies, we do find in favor of decreased cough with the honey.
We can add that to the blog and actually put the forest plot up. The two, they were relatively small studies, weren't they?
Yes.
265 children in total, I believe.
Yeah, so we're not talking huge, huge numbers here. So this kind of, the problem with this study, I love the idea of the study, something that you've got in your fridge or your cupboard that you don't have to go spend big bucks on, that doesn't have, you know, any major risks associated with it for the most part. But the study, this two studies included, unfortunately, because of the blinding issue, were a bit of a problem. The ideal study would be a study that has a control group that actually receives something that tastes and looks like honey but isn't honey.
Corn syrup?
Well, you know, that's a good question. You know, does corn syrup, would it have any effect or not? What's really great for us this year is not only did we luck out and get this kind of interesting systematic review to look at, but there was another RCT that came out called The Effect of Honey on Nocturnal Cough and Sleep Quality, a double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled study.
So a better form of evidence when you're looking at the two studies that were included in a systematic review.
Absolutely. And so in this case, they actually looked at three different types of honey, and they had something called a silindate extract prepared by...
It doesn't sound natural.
No, it doesn't sound natural at all, but...
That would be the natural fallacy.
Yeah.
You know, oh, it's natural, it must be good.
Yeah, I think I could probably make a long list of things that are natural that I wouldn't necessarily consume. So what was awesome is this was a really well-performed RCT, and what they found was significant symptomatic relief in terms of cough, as well as improved sleep, which for me are the two major complaints that kids will come in with when they have a URTI.
So you're not going to cure their cold, but you can control their symptoms.
Yep.
And make them feel better and have the household sleep.
Absolutely. Now, there is one caveat to any time we're using honey in kids. And I always mention this because I think it's something that we have to be wary of. It's just the issue of botulism.
Botulism? From
unpasteurized honey.
Unpasteurized honey, yeah.
Now, you know, botulism, you get paralysis. Part of paralysis is you stop coughing. So botulism can certainly cure your coughing.
And breathing,
and you stop breathing. And so we really have to, like, I mean, even though people with botulism will probably have improved cough, they'll have no respiratory rate. So
just for a beam bottom line, we'll just throw this out there. Botulism, bad.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Unpasteurized honey, bad.
Yes. And so we generally don't use honey in kids less than 1 year.
It's 1 year, yeah.
Yeah. Because of the
concern. That's the recommendation, botulism. Yeah.
So, you know, here are three studies. One that shows that this whole aisle in your pharmacies that contains all of this medication is essentially no evidence of effect and significant evidence of risk. And then the little section in the pharmacy that has a couple little bottles of honey should really be where we should be directing families to go. And this is what I do with families all the time, is talk to them about this study very briefly and say, you know, don't buy that other stuff. Buy, you know, honey and a teaspoon of honey, you know, Q6 to 8 hours.
And PRN.
PRN.
I like that.
Yeah.
Teaspoon of honey, Q6 hours, PRN.
Yeah.
That's a great take-home message. Well, thanks, Anthony. I'm glad you were able to be here. I was able to come down to the hammer for Steel Beam, and we could do a topic in pediatrics. Now, next time, we'll have to tackle a much harder topic, like, I don't know, bronchiolitis.
Oh, let's do it.
Oh, yeah, let's do bronchiolitis. That's a nice, tough one, isn't it? Can you think of any other tough ones we should tackle in the near future?
Antipyretics.
Oh, antipyretics, yep.
Yeah.
Fever treatment in kids.
Yeah, there was a good article this year looking at combined therapy for antipyretics, which I'd love to... go on my anti-pyresis tirade.
Okay, so we'll have to have pediatric podcast tirades with Anthony.
Yeah.
Yes, little fireside chats while he tirades. All right, so that's great. So I hope the SJAM listeners enjoyed that. Because we're recording this early, I don't have who the Keener contest winner is from last week because I haven't posted that one yet. But I will put that in the blog and on the tweet so people know who won it. And we need a Keener contest for this week. Who are the two faculty members who are not present on this podcast? So who are the two faculty members that are not present on this podcast but were present on the previous podcast? That's a great Keener contest. Well, I hope everybody enjoyed this episode. We would like you to like us on Facebook. We could always use more likes on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. And don't panic. Be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you learned it on the SJAM. Talk to you next week.